Representing Bigfoot. Say.
When I was in when I was in ninth grade, my mom had a man she'd been flirting with move into our house while he quote unquote got back on his feet.
You have an operation?
He just crawled into the house. He slithered in. Anyways, he traveled all the way from Oregon to our house in New Hampshire carrying a couple of gifts. An Oregon mascot that was green and vaguely cute. Stifford, because it was cheap. And a jersey, again, right, with the Oregon University emblem.
Yeah.
And
you know he was coming to New Hampshire.
Anyways, the other thing he had was a photo album, but not just one, multiple photo albums full of newspaper clippings all about the murder of one college student in 1980.
Really?
And it was creepy, and he was creepy. And for years, like in the back of my head, I thought that maybe his obsession with this murder meant that he was the murderer of this college student, Barbara Mae Tucker.
Yeah, when were you in ninth grade? It wasn't 1980.
No, but I was wrong.
Oh, he wasn't the murderer.
No. And we're going to talk about who is allegedly the murderer for Barbara Mae Tucker all the way back in 1980 right now. So back in January of 1980, I was not in ninth grade, first off. Just so everyone doesn't think I'm even older than I am, but...
Were you a junior?
No!
I know, you're only 9 years old, maybe. Actually.
Anyways, so back in January of 1980, in Oregon, Barbara Mae Tucker was one of those girls who stood out. Strong and almost 6 feet tall. She had light brown hair and chocolate brown eyes and was a goofball, according to the people who knew her. Others said that she was extroverted and smart and had a lot of friends. And she was also studious, always showing up to classes, never blowing them off, right?
Dang, man. She sounds like a model-A kid.
I know, right? She was... like, the youngest of 7 people in her family, right? That's a lot. And she was the first one to go to college. She had drive, right?
I'd say so.
And that drive pushed her into national competitions in high school for business-oriented students and made her a force on the basketball court. And she called her mom the day that she died and said that if her evening classes ended early, she'd be heading to a friend's house and getting some ice cream. So she was kind of balanced, right? She had this drive, but she was also someone who cared about her friends and did things.
Yeah.
Articles, newspaper articles, like the one in those photo albums, called her witty and fun and spiritual and strong-willed and studious.
So all those articles were about this young lady?
All of them were about this one woman.
Man, that's crazy.
Yeah, and that's why I was like, because he was a creepy guy, right?
Yeah, man.
So I was really like, he killed this girl.
I don't blame you at 9 years old. Or when, I don't know when he came to the house.
He came to our house when I was in high school.
Oh, all right, okay.
So anyways, Barbara Mae Tucker, who this is about, was fun. As we said, one childhood friend told Oregon Live, "We got pulled over by the cops because we were sitting in the back seat with our feet on top of the back seat and dancing. Barbie turned around and got really serious, said, 'You guys, buckle up quick. We're going to get in trouble. Put your seatbelt on.' And we were cracking up, laughing. She loved to goof around and have fun, but she was serious about not getting in trouble." Like, so she didn't ever want to get in real trouble, but she wanted to have fun, right?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of sounds like you, Shawnee.
That's actually right.
All right, so on this terrible night, it was raining, and Barbara had a class at night at Mount Hood Community College. She was focused on business classes, and she was halfway through her sophomore year. And people saw her that night. The people who saw her last-ish. They saw her running out of some woods on the border of campus and town. She ran into Northeast Kane Drive. She looked like she was waving maybe to some people. She looked like she was maybe trying to get someone to notice her. And according to a report by Oxygen, some people who saw her thought her face was dirty and she was bloody. And people saw her, Barbara, who her family called Barbara, Barbie. They saw Barbie running.
In those conditions.
In rain, muddy face, maybe blood on her face, maybe blood on her clothes, trying to get noticed, and no one pulled over their car. No one rolled down their window and yelled through the rain and asked her if something was wrong. No one stopped.
That's insane.
And it is the most heartbreaking thing I've ever heard. So, according to Oxygen, on the night of January 15th, 1980, passersby in Gresham, Oregon, swerved their cars around a woman waving her arms out of desperation in the middle of the street, according to the local news outlet, The Outlook.
That's insane again, I say. What the hell?
I know. I'm just like, I'm never moving. Like, I don't want to, like, you can't give all of Oregon a rap for what happened in 1980.
Yeah.
But man, kinda. That's terrible.
Just the all ones right. in Gresham.
Back then, I guess, driving those cars. Someone actually told the police that not only did they see Barbara running, but they saw a man come out of the shrubs, and they thought he was leading her back to campus. According to The Outlook, people seeing and not stopping was, quote, what haunted her family years after.
I can only imagine it was. Holy shit.
I don't think I could have ever overcome that.
I know.
So The Outlook continues by saying, witnesses told police that many drivers had to swerve and brake to keep from hitting her, and one car almost hit Tucker. One witness remembered seeing blood and mud on her face, but no one pulled over to check on her, even as a man grabbed her arm and pulled her off the road and back into the woods near the campus. Some witnesses even thought it was a college prank or youthful game of dodging traffic.
I've never heard of that game.
Maybe it's something they do in Oregon.
Maybe.
The next morning, someone found Barbie's body in the bushes near where others had seen her running and seen the man. An exam shown that she had been beaten to death and raped. Her books for her class and her purse weren't right there, but they were pretty close by. And everyone who loved Barbie felt guilty, according to the reports from Oregon Live. Her mom, who's dead now too, thought it was her fault for letting Barbara go so far away to college. And, like, that breaks my heart, right?
Yeah, that wasn't that far, was it?
No, but, you know, like, I had to kind of pick colleges within 2.5 hours from my home because my mom couldn't handle me going farther away because she just was so nervous that she wasn't going to be there to take care of me, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which has created who I am now, right? Because our oldest daughter, Em, she's gone adventuring away from home on programs and camps and trips since she was little. Like, she went to stunt camp in California in sixth grade and directing camp in New York City before her freshman year of high school, and the police academy summer camp, and Costa Rica for a sophomore year, and Israel when missiles were landing, and New York again to study Arabic, and Greece to study, and she adventured across Iceland and Norway by herself, and Eastern and Central Europe by herself, and with friends. And there are people who said, how can you let her do that?
Yeah.
And they're just like, how can you let her leave and do these things? She could die. What kind of mother are you? It was like a litany of judgment over and over again.
That's stupid.
And I let her do things because my mom didn't let her do
things. Let you do things.
Yeah, let me do things. So here's the thing. Like, Emmy could die, right?
Sure.
You and I both know that, however, that most women in our country aren't killed because they are on adventures in other parts of the world.
Right. That's true.
Three women every single day are murdered by their partners. Not strangers, but their partners. Three women. That's like about a third of all the women.
That's insane.
Yeah. All right. So more than 600 women are raped or sexually assaulted every day, according to the National Crime Victimization Survey. The FBI numbers are lower because they get their data from law enforcement, and a butt ton of women don't report it when they've been raped. And they also don't report it when their intimate partners assault them, and not even 20% of women get medical treatment when they've been injured. The U.S. Justice Department believes that less than 5% of all rapes are reported.
That's crazy.
I know.
Like, seriously.
But it's cases like Barbara's, these absolutely horrible, horrible tragedies that get the attention. And they should get attention because what happened to Barbara is horrific and so terribly wrong. But other people are also suffering behind closed doors all the time. And we can't. We don't know their stories, so we don't get to share them. And Barbara's mother, she can't blame herself for allowing her daughter to get an education where she wanted to get an education. That was actually empowering Barbara. And I'm so sick of mothers taking the blame or being blamed for what happens to their children when their children should just be able to be safe. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, that's right.
So that was my soapbox.
Uh-huh.
It breaks my heart that her mom took the blame. Like,
it's horrible. She shouldn't have.
I know.
You gotta let your kids fly out of the nest.
I know it. We both have a little bit of a hard time with that. But anyways, even though I let my baby fly out of the nest, I just constantly expect texts and phone calls telling me she's not dead. So, from Pamplin Media, let's talk about that story a little. My nose is bleeding in the podcast.
I'm sorry.
Oh! I got too upset.
Do you want a tissue?
No, there's no tissue in the podcast studio. All right, so anyways, Barbara and her friend, again, this is a direct quote from Pamplin Media. She had a friend from an apartment complex, Lori Thompson Stomps, and they played hooky that afternoon and went to a Grisham gym and then back to Barbara's apartment, and Barbara drove all those places. She had an old beater, Stomp says. She always drove. I don't recall her walking. And that was an observation that Tucker's family would make repeatedly in the coming weeks and years. She never walked, especially to night classes. She always drove, right? Mm-hmm. So that was weird. Stomps, who says no one called or came by Barbara's apartment while she was there, left sometime after it got dark. The weather, she recalls, was still clear, but really cold. Like, windy and really nasty.
Like here today.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, continuing on from that Pamplin media source, Barbara also talked to her mother by telephone late that day, telling her that she was going to stop by Stomps' apartment for ice cream if her 7 or 10 p.m. class got out early. But Barbara neither showed up for her class nor visited Stomps. While listening to the radio the next day, Louise Tucker heard about a slaying of a Mount Hood student. She called her now deceased sister, Ruth Clock, to fret. There are thousands of girls at Mount Hood. Don't be worried, Clock told her. Just then, two men came to Tucker's door and rang the bell. Albert Tucker talked to them briefly and walked into the kitchen. The look on his face, Louise Tucker said later, was all she needed to see. Ruth, she screamed. Ruth, it's my Barbie. She hung up the phone. Isn't that horrible?
Yes.
It's so friggin' sad. So another student found Barbara's body around 7 in the morning by a grove of trees that were fringed by snow right by that road, Northeast Kane Drive. And that road is the western boundary of the college, right?
Mm-hmm.
They found her books and her purse nearby, but her car was at her apartment, right? Which is kind of interesting.
Yes, and she never walked the class.
Yeah, she fought. She had defensive wounds. She died of a head injury. And Louise, again, felt really guilty, but she was also so confused. And she told The Outlook in 1981, it's just unreal that people care so little about another human being.
Still true to this day.
Yeah. And you know, she's thinking of all those people who passed by her daughter and her daughter was trying to get help.
I can't even think about that.
It's horrible. So when a student found Barbie's body in the shrubs, it set off mourning. It set off life choices that lasted and made ripples for decades. Her dad, Albert, had to leave the room whenever anyone mentioned Barbie's death because he just couldn't talk about it. And he died in 1989. Her mom died in 1995, constantly trying to figure out who killed her daughter. She kept notes, handwritten notes, notes that said things like, if it takes 10 years, I don't care. I just can't let it rest. But she rested before those answers finally came, which they have, maybe, 41 years later. Well, wow. He's not convicted yet. So one of her daughters told Pamplin Media, Sherry Jorgensen, a Portland resident and one of Barbara's sisters, says their mother's depression over the killing and tension it created within the family was never completely resolved. I'm sitting here right now, she said, with tears welling up in my eyes. Mom had lost her daughter, but didn't seem to remember that she still had us. I think it's important for people to know that every member of a murder victim's family becomes a victim. Our main interest is finding a way to bring this horrible killer to justice, another one of their daughters says. Never give up hope, because we haven't. We can't believe someone out there doesn't know something. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So
somebody does.
Yeah. Well, Maria and Adrian was also friends with Barbara throughout their childhood, and she told Oregon Live that how it impacted her was she anxiously waited for her own children to pass the milestones Barbara never got to achieve. After her children graduated from college, got married, and settled into their lives, she could finally breathe. She said, bad things happen to good people, and there's nothing I could do to change it. There were no clues this would happen to Barbara. I came to terms with it a long time ago. I know she went through hell those last couple hours as she was dying. After that, I watched her family go through the pain, but I knew she wasn't hurting anymore. So, like, think of all those people. Like, it's amazing.
Impacted, yeah.
Yeah. So when Barbie died...
Parents and children.
Yeah, and grandchildren. Mm-hmm. I mean, when Barbie died, her mom got a yellow rose and planted it in the yard, and every rose bush, and every year it blossomed, and every year it grew, and every year they didn't find answers about what happened to Barbie, and that had to hurt, you know?
Heck yeah.
Gresham Police Interim Chief Claudio Grangine told Oxygen.com, with a case like this, there's a large wound to the family. Secondary, there's a wound to the community and a wound to the police department, but we get a chance to heal all of those. According to the police reports, one or more of the witnesses described the young man in that street who dragged her back in to the bushes, right?
Mm-hmm.
As in his early 20s, about 6 feet tall, with a muscular build, broad shoulders, and a square neck. He was expensively dressed in a light beige knitted ski cap, navy blue ski parka, and blue or gray pants, and he walked with a distinctive swagger, a bold, arrogant strut.
Uh-huh.
So the DNA story is what breaks this.
Oh, really? Again?
Yes.
Nice.
Yeah. So Barbie Tucker's death horrified her family, her friends, and the entire community. And it also inspired that man visiting my mom and living in my house and drinking from 8 a.m. to midnight while pretending to look for work to keep multiple scrapbooks on Barbie's death. Like, you can see why I'm like, maybe he did it. And in my imagination and little kid terror of this man, I constructed a story that he had to have been the one who killed the girl in the scrapbook, the one who smiled out in the news story, you know, the one with the strut and the swagger, you know, like...
Did he have a strut and a swagger?
He freaking did, actually. He was also 6 feet tall. But I was wrong. The Gresham Police Department kept all the evidence they had. And in 2015, there was enough DNA advancements for actual DNA testing, enough people in DNA databases for them to hope that maybe they could, like, crack this case. Detective Aaron Turnage was the detective in charge of Barbie's case, and he gave the DNA from the crime scene to Parabon Nano Labs LLC. And that lab created a DNA profile, right?
Yeah, that's so cool.
Okay, so these people, right?
Yeah.
Create this DNA profile, and it's amazing because what DNA can do, I mean, I guess it's not amazing if you're bad guy.
Yeah, right.
I don't know. So these cold cases are not lost or forgotten for our department, said that interim chief, Grangine. Each one represents a person, right?
Mm-hmm.
To our officers. And their tragic stories are passed down through the generations in hopes of one day bringing honor to their names and a sense of justice and closure to their cases. And that DNA stuff was enough. Because Robert Plimpton, a 58-year-old white guy from Troutdale, Oregon, was arrested by Gresham police on a Tuesday in June and booked at the Multnomah Multnomah, I don't know, I'm so sorry, County Jail. And the next day he was arraigned. And then that sister, one of the sisters, Susan Pater, said when that happened, we always had hope. At one point we thought he was dead. Maybe it would never be solved. I just wish that his arraignment could have happened when the rest of my family was here, especially my parents. And then Turnage said there was one thing that kept him going in the plate, in the case, according to the KOIN website, right? He said, I promised her I was going to solve the case, and that means working around the clock. If that's what it means, that's what happens. There have been a lot of hurdles, and sitting down and experiencing that with my family last night is something I've never experienced in my career. It was awesome. Pretty awesome is what he said the day after Plimpton got arraigned, right?
I'm sure it was awesome. They must have been ecstatic.
Her sister did not recognize Robert Plimpton's name. She said they didn't know all of her friends, but like everything they had right now that's out in public says it sounds like he was just a stranger. Totally out of the blue.
That's crazy.
According to a press release from Gresham Police, quote, using DNA technology not available to detectives in the 1980s, Gresham Police have identified a Troutdale man as the suspect in the city's oldest cold case homicide. Robert Plimpton, 58, was arrested by detectives during a surveillance mission on June 8th. Investigators allege that Plimpton is responsible for the murder of 19-year-old Barbara Mae Tucker 41 years ago.
Huh. I was just doing the math. So
2021.
He was actually younger than her?
Yes.
Because she'd be 60 right now.
Yes, he was 16.
Oh, he was 16?
Yeah.
Oh.
So, at the time of this podcast, Robert Plimpton, the man linked to the DNA and arrested for allegedly raping and murdering Barbie, still hasn't gone to the trial for those 1980s crimes. Like, because he just hasn't gone to a trial.
The wheels of justice turn slowly sometimes.
Especially during COVID. And he was, again, just 16 when Barbie died, and he was going to Reynolds High School nearby. And again, he has not been convicted of this, right? In 1997, so 17 years after Barbie was raped and killed, he had a brush with the law and was accused of attempted sodomy and assault on a woman who said he drove her to a place that was secluded. Once there, she alleges he attacked her, but the case was dismissed because there wasn't enough evidence.
Oh,
yeah.
Imagine that.
I know. So, yeah, that's like the whole, like, case of Barbara Mae Tucker. And I know.
So, you sure you didn't have an accomplice and it wasn't your mom's man friend there?
I don't know. I hope not. And they only. God only knows, actually. My mama's man friend would have been probably smart enough to wear gloves. but, like, it's horrible, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's super horrible.
Are you looking at my nose to see if it's bleeding?
I wasn't.
Oh.
It's not. Okay. Now that I look at it.
All right.
Not at all.
I know you all can't see him, but Sean's looking at me really weird. Thank God this isn't a video podcast because my nose started bleeding.
Yeah, I know. It wasn't bad, though.
It's embarrassing. I would
have had to be in my shirt.
You'd have had to rip it off. Everybody would have seen a shirtless Sean.
It's not video, baby.
I know, but if it was,
yeah.
But isn't that sad? But all like, I wish that her parents had
known that he got caught.
Yeah.
Hopefully convicted.
Yeah.
That'd be nice.
But what's amazing to me is there's like a slew of stories, you know, the day after and the week after he got arraigned.
Yeah.
But nothing. There's absolutely nothing.
Oh, that's strange.
Isn't it?
Probably because he's just sitting there waiting.
I guess, but you'd think somebody would be like, hey, he's still sitting there waiting, like a local newspaper or something.
Yeah, just a little update.
Yeah, it's very weird to me.
It is.
But I don't know what the cautionary tale of this is would be, because we don't know exactly what happened that night still.
Don't let your kids go off by themselves until they're 35.
That's not what it is.
Okay.
You have to let them go off so they can build the life skills and resilience and have real lives.
I understand.
But I just want to wrap them all up in bubble wrap.
Keep them safe.
But they would suffocate in bubble wrap. But you know what I mean. right?
Yes, I do.
You have any thought? I guess they had 12 suspects originally.
Really?
Yeah.
And he wasn't one.
And her boyfriend was one of the suspects. But they are all cleared. And I don't believe he was one of the suspects. Which is interesting, too.
That would make sense, though.
And I think her boyfriend had even, like, his family had hired a lawyer. Because they were so freaked out that he was going to get blamed. And the lawyers died very quickly afterwards. Because I guess he was unhealthy. But he was allegedly quite bullying to Barbara's family.
The boyfriend was?
No, not the boyfriend himself. But the lawyer that his family had hired. He was kind of one of those, like, big, gruff, intimidating kind of lawyers. For this family, which is also kind of sad.
It is.
Yeah.
In their time of despair.
Major despair and grief and mourning. Hey, well, thanks for being here and stay safe. Oh,
thank you so much.
Next week, we're going paranormal.
Are we?
Yeah, because they're more fun.
Sweet. Is it going to be something other than Bigfoot? These are kind of depressing
sometimes. Ugh, I can't do Bigfoot. We can do the werewolves of Palmyra.
Whatever you want to do. All but right. All of our paranormal's been Bigfoot, hasn't it?
Well, that's because Bigfoot's cool.
I know, but we got aliens and ghosts and
werewolves.
Chupacabra and werewolves.
And pixies.
Pixies. I've yet to see a pixie story on TV or online, actually. Oh,
you live in a bubble, my friend.
I do.
There are tons.
Are there any unexplained Maine?
I don't know. Unexplained Maine, for those of you who don't know, is a lovely Facebook group where a couple people put orbs in photos and then everybody else is really mean to them. No, it's really actually...
Not always mean.
But it's actually a pretty fun group to look at.
I think it's pretty fair, too, mostly.
Yeah, mostly.
Some people on either far end, but...
Yeah, it's a good, interesting group.
It is. I mean, when they're mean to somebody, it's usually obvious. Like,
no. Sometimes they're just mean. There are some meanies out there. meanies. Wow. Stay safe.
Yeah. Hey, thank you for listening to Dude No. Please be sure to like, share, and subscribe. And tell all your friends. What a goofy couple has this podcast and how good it is to listen to.
Be kind.
Be kind. Yes. Thank you.